on TV and hear what a coach is saying to his team in the locker room. Everything is about, quote, inside access, unquote, whether it is watching Olympic athletes sitting nervously with their headphones on just before they are called on to compete or getting information from an athlete's website. Back then, when I told people I had complete access to Knight, including standing in the locker room with my tape recorder running before, during, and after games, and listening in to what was said in the huddle during timeouts, few people actually believed me. I still remember the look on CBS analyst Billy Packer's face when I walked onto the court at Michigan with Knight and took my seat on the end of the bench for the Big Ten deciding game that season. "What are you doing there?" he asked me at halftime. "Researching my book," I answered. "Oh boy," he said. "Bob's going to be sorry about this." Of course, we all know now that Knight was more angry than sorry when the book came out. He wrote in his autobiography that giving me access was the worst mistake he ever made because I turned out to be a bad guy and I violated our agreement by leaving some of his profanity in the book. Trust me, if I'd left it all in there, I'd still be writing. There isn't any doubt in my mind that Knight honestly believed we had some sort of agreement on profanity. When I told him the book had to include profanity in order to have credibility, he said he understood, but he didn't. People who use a lot of profanity, I speak unfortunately from personal experience, rarely understand just how often they use it. Knight was stunned one night during my winter with him when he told a friend of his that he really thought he had done a good job cutting down on his profanity that season, and the friend, in a rare moment for someone in Knight's inner circle, told him he was wrong. For the record, the friend was Bob Murray, who put on his clinics. Bob Hamill would have swallowed his tongue before he would have contradicted Knight. When Knight read Chapter 1, in which I described the locker room scene in which he completely went off on Daryl Thomas, he couldn't believe how much profanity there was in his rant. What he didn't know was that I had removed about 80% of the F-words in the speech and had completely removed his repeated use of a word that rhymes with bunt. So he called me a lot of names, many of them profane, after the book came out. There are still people who believe Knight's name-calling made the book a bestseller, forgetting it was already number 2 on the New York Times list before he said anything publicly. Others say I was lucky because Indiana won the national championship in 1987. A nice theory, but the book takes place a year earlier, when Indiana lost in the first round of the NCAA tournament to Cleveland State. And there are many who believe the access I had was critical. I buy that theory up to a point. What made A Season on the Brink so successful was the access I had to Knight. The book would not have sold as well if I had had the same access to Dean Smith or John Thompson, the two highest profile coaches along with Knight back then, or even Jim Valvano, who had become a major figure in the college game after North Carolina State's stunning national title run in 1983. If I had waited 6 years and had that same access to Mike Krzyzewski after his back-to-back national titles at Duke, the book still would not have become a publishing phenomenon. There just isn't anyone like Knight, for better and worse. That's why people are so fascinated by him even today, when he's little more than another retired coach still looking for a sliver of the spotlight by working on TV. The irony of Knight being a member of the media, in any form, is almost too funny for words. Of course, Knight would insist he's different than anyone else working on TV, and he's right. Most color commentators show up for pregame shoot-arounds, try to talk to coaches before a game about their team, and try to get a sense of who the players are before the game starts. Knight does none of that. He just shows up, in a sweater, of course, which has created the reality TV-like comedy of ESPN putting play-by-play men in sweaters rather than telling Knight he has to wear a coat and tie like everyone else, and watches the game. Fortunately for him, his understanding of basketball is so keen that he can figure out what both teams are trying to do very quickly and explain it eloquently. If anyone else in TV tried to pull off Knight's act, they'd be fired before they ever did a second game. At the end of A Season on the Brink, I wondered if Knight would ultimately self-destruct. Sadly, even though he would vehemently deny it, he did. Can you imagine any coach with Knight's on-court and off-court record at Indiana managing to get himself fired after 28 years on the job? He won 3 national titles, an Olympics, an NIT, and dominated the Big Ten. Almost all his players graduated. There was never the smallest hint of any sort of NCAA rules violation, Steve Alford's charity calendar appearance aside, from the first day he was in Bloomington until the day he was forced out the door.